This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Dalton Dietrich, assistant coach, DePaul University men's basketball. Coach, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, Klein. It's a long time coming.
Let's do this. So why don't you tell us your story, Dalton? How did you get into coaching? What was that like for you? And since we're on stop two, what was the process like for you landing your first job that involved basketball, not as a player, and any subsequent ones following that?
Absolutely. I'm only 24, but I've taken a long, windy road to get to where I am today. I would say it all started my junior year of high school. Playing career had already ended after my freshman year. The glory days were done. But my junior year, right before the state championship game, had a really good team at high school, and I was super close with our starting shooting guard. And they were going light that week in practice, and we had a couple classes together, and he was like, I want to get shots up. And his dad's a superintendent, so he's got the keys to all the gyms. And I jokingly said, like, how can I work you out? And at the time, I just said it to say it. And he honestly was just like, yeah, sure. I trust you. Give me what you got. So that night, We went to elementary school in town and went for about an hour. And I used all the Drew Hamlin and Chris Brickley videos I had seen, shooting drills and whatnot. And later that week in the state championship game, he went for 17 and they won. So I definitely think that helped quite a bit. We still joke about it to this day. And then following that, he's a gym rat as a whole. So he took about a week off. And after that, it became a common occurrence. I didn't know if I wanted to get into coaching or what I wanted to do, but I loved the experience of just being in the gym and experimenting with different things. And also at that exact same time on that exact team, we had a player that was ranked top five in the nation. And I loved the game of basketball. I followed religiously, and he's getting recruited by the who's who, the Bill Selfs, the Rick Pitinos, Bryce Drew, everybody's involved. And I'm seeing him come through school, and my friend's like, why don't you be a manager? And I'm like, maybe. And then I gave it a couple of days, and it was, so I grew up a Duke fan, and I'll get to where this ends in a second, but I grew up a Duke fan. And one day I'm walking out of school and Greg Paulus walks by, former Duke point guard. Now, where at the time he was coaching Ohio State, and it like hit me. I was like, okay, it'd be cool to be around and just experience it. I don't know where it will take me. So that following day I came to the head coach, and they had asked me prior and I had passed it up, and I told him I'd love to join. And not a week later, I get a text from our head coach, and he's like, guess who's coming to town tomorrow? And I don't know. Everybody's came so far. And he's like, John Shire and Nolan Smith, Duke's coming to town. Your boys are coming to town. And I'm like, you're lying to me. He's like, no, I promise. If you want to come, he's going to do a workout. If you want to rebound, be around, pass, do something. I'm like, nah, they can't pass this up. I grew up watching John Shire and Nolan Smith. So next day comes. I may or may not have wore a Duke shirt, a little bit of a fan at the time. So I walk into the gym and they're standing there. We're talking to our head coach. I walk over and our head coach is like, you know these guys? And I'm like, come on, coach. Do I know these guys? Like, I watched them growing up. And I guess he had given the rundown to John Shire already. And Shire's like, I heard you're a big Duke guy. Like, it's great to meet you. And I had met a couple of the coaches already in that prior week. Like Roy Williams came. Roy Williams actually came the day after they won the national championship. So that was pretty cool. I met a couple of others, but nobody really, Roy took a little interest, but nobody really cared to know my story. But John Shire took probably 5 to 10 minutes. To me, it felt like an eternity. And he just, what are you interested in? What's your passions? And he talked me into coaching. He was like, you sound like you were really interested in the game. I think you should try this manager thing out. Like maybe even at the college level, he talked about prior managers, that Duke that it went the manager route. And I feel like at that moment, it was like the light bulb moment for me. Like it went from, it's an experience. I just want to be a part of it to let's take this real seriously and see where we can go. So I spent the whole spring, summer with them, finished out as a manager. And then I had a tie to Indiana State, where we had a current manager at Indiana State. He had known the Dobo well. And one thing I definitely want to do in college would be a manager. So I, not recruited wise, but I definitely looked at schools where I was like, hey, I would love to be a manager. And I ended up joining Indiana State. And my freshman year, I learned there is a big difference between high school and college ball. I know I didn't know anything, but you get in your first college practice and it's fast paced and the terminology, and that whole first year was a whole whirlwind for myself as a manager. But sophomore year, I joke around with guys that when I first got to Indiana State, the managers didn't really go in the office unless you needed something done. And by my middle of sophomore year, I practically had like residency in the office. I lived there. I was sitting next to GAs, picking their brains, and you couldn't get me out of the office. It was just an all the time deal. And then that carried on to multiple things. My sophomore year going into, I only did 3 years of college. So my sophomore year and going into junior really became my senior year. And I was, I did the NCAA Basketball Academy. It was the inaugural first in NCAA Basketball Academy. I was one of 12 managers selected, went to Illinois. And I mean, I walk in and I'm looking at guys that are managers like Michigan State, Dayton. And I'm like, these are the big dogs right here. I'm talking to a guy that works for Tom Izzo and all these things. And at that moment, I actually got my best friend that was a shooting guard. He was playing Division III ball and he got invited as a player to work it. So there's managers, like student athletes. We're part of the same group. So we worked it together. And at the time there was a coach at Rose Holman named Rusty Lloyd, who was in my best friend's conference. So we all became close, super tight. Little did I know, I'm not working for Rusty Lloyd at DePaul. So that's where we're slowly getting to where it all ties in. But I enjoy that experience. I finished out as a undergrad manager, and thankfully I was blessed enough to be brought back as a GA at Indiana State. Coach Lansing wanted to bring me back once I told him that was my intention, if I really wanted to pursue coaching and do it at the grad level. This was during the COVID season. And unfortunately, after that year, Coach Lansing was, his contract wasn't renewed. So we had a new coach coming in, and I actually lived through a coaching transition. So I got to see what that was like. Coach Schertz was grateful enough to have me back around the program in a grad role. I was burned out at the time, so it was a little leeway with a lot going on. So I'm super grateful for that. And then after I finished my time at Indiana State, it was up in the air. As we've had previous conversations, I didn't know what was going on. I wasn't sure what was the next step. And I just happened to work at a rec center during that time. The starting center on Larry Bird's team, his son owned the rec center, and he actually coached an AAU team on the Under Armour circuit. And he was like, why don't you come coach with me? And I was like, let's do it. So I spent last summer coaching AAU. And right as I started to coach AAU after I graduated, I told Coach Lloyd, hey, if I don't find anything, like, I'll volunteer for you at Rose Holman, where he was currently at. And he's, to be honest with you, I think tomorrow it's going to be announced that I'm getting the job at DePaul, which is about 45 minutes down the road. And I'm like, okay, I can do it. All right, I'll volunteer for you at DePaul. And then time goes on, and a couple opportunities came up, some support staff roles, but I'd always just wanted to coach. Like Coach John Shulman, he's at Alabama Huntsville now. He'd always told me there's something special about being called coach and having that role and whatnot. And there was a couple D1 support staff roles, but I knew Coach Lloyd from way back at the old NCAA Academy. And he hit me up late July, early August around this time. And I was like, he asked me if I want to join. He was like, it may not sound intriguing and interesting to you, but would you like to be a fraternity dad? And I had never been the frat life, never done any of that at the Division I level. It's super uncommon at our level, obviously. And I'm like, why not? Let's do it. And one of my mentors always told me to at least don't turn down a basketball opportunity, hear him out, live it through, especially at my age. And I was like, let's do it. So here I am, just wrapped up year one at DePaul. I loved it. It's been amazing. Recruiting and everything that you put in a ton of hours as a manager, GA, on things you'd like to implement or do and whatnot. But obviously, your voice doesn't hold the most weight and whatnot. It works its way up. You talk to the third assistant and he talks to the next guy if it's good enough. But man, this year, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome. There's a lot of stuff to work with there. So I want to dive in specifically to the idea that you can't coach if you don't have an extensive playing background. And given the nature of your path, talk a little bit about the challenges you faced with that reality and how that's actually benefited you as you have now begun to coach at the level you're at.
Absolutely. There's a lot of challenges. I'd say the first one coming up in my time was the guys ahead of me at the GA level that we had that were previous managers. I don't know if they wanted to get into coaching. There was maybe a reputation or whatnot. And obviously as a coach and in this space is the players have to believe in what you're saying. And a lot of guys, you may not believe the manager or whatnot, but one thing that I took seriously from that sophomore year on was just living in the gym as well. 10 o'clock, you need somebody, I'm here. 11 o'clock, you need somebody, I'm here. And those just added up from one guy to two. And then you take taking pride in your passing. I never, like, a lot of really good players that I've been around, the attention to detail and just making crisp passes, that really helped. Just a lot of sweat equity and being available. And then a lot of it, once you build up that small amount of credibility, and it comes into a lot of the film you've watched and a lot of the outside things that play a role. And I definitely think there's something to be said for a lot of the managers that have came up. And there was at one point, actually, my freshman year, I definitely need to update it. But in my freshman year, I did a little research of how many managers are actually Division I coaches and how many didn't play D1 at all. And it definitely showed me there's a path for this. And I definitely think there's something to be said for it, for sure.
Love it. I also want to tap into maybe what I would consider some misconceptions about what the term/role of the manager is. As I got my start in the same boat, I was a manager for multiple years and then got promoted to an assistant coach and then hired as a full-time coach at the same spot. But Talk a little bit about your experience as a high school manager briefly, collegiate manager, and what you learned through the myriad tasks that were just coming at you. Talk a little bit about how that has now served you moving into a role as a teaching assistant.
Absolutely. High school, I would say it was pretty laid back. It was more your logistical in terms of just making sure the gear's ready, you pass and rebounding. We also had a huge staff in high school because we were really good. So everybody wanted to be a part of it. So I didn't do too much, just ball under your arm and a towel around you. But when I got to college, that's when it really took off. You're helping with food on the road. We did class checks. We would wake guys up in the morning if they weren't up. There was a lot of things collegiately where, and then as you build up a little credibility through those years, your junior year, you're helping more with the film. I didn't know what synergy was. I learned a lot about synergy. And honestly, the more you learned and the more you're willing to take on as a manager, the more the staff that they were open to giving it to you. I remember my senior year, I was talking to a couple of the assistants and I had never spoken about wanting to truly go into coaching, like super pursue it. And one of our GAs at the time, and I'm super grateful for him, he went up to his assistant or our assistant and was like, he's dying to coach. Like, you got anything for him? And we had an app or service called Fast Recruit. And it was just something the coaches would do, go out to AAU and keep guys in mind. And he was like, look, I'll give you access to Fast Recruit. Like, I want you to find out where guys are playing AAU wise. And I want you to input all of this. Like, it would take a lot off of us. So I took that and ran with it. And then this was also the same year that the portal kind of started to be a big thing. And there wasn't really like a portal service or whatnot. So I would go on verbal commits and find every portal guy and type in his stats. And I was, any task they would give me, I was all for it. I was a basketball junkie and I just kept digging. And honestly, a lot of it, paying the dues through that. And also at the same time as a manager, both high school and collegially, I didn't get paid. So it was like, I just did it for the love of the game. And I still do this day. The pays probably will never be there. And that's something I'm okay with. You just love what you do. And from our interactions, I've just been living on cloud nine. And man, I can't say enough about paying your dues. And I think it really, I've talked to my best friend's actually a GA now, and we still talk to this day. And I was telling him, like, dude, you have no idea. I've done what you're doing now. I did it in various roles for 5 years. Like, at that role, and when you play or transfer or you're as a manager, it's like you really find out if you love the game, if it's something you really want to do. Mm-hmm. And for me, it checked that box. This is what I want to do. I want to impact lives, and especially guys, the younger generations coming up, I want to impact and inspire them.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think one key takeaway for people that are listening and their early career in some of these entry-level jobs is that you lived in the office, even when you weren't getting paid to do so. And it was a similar approach that led me to the opportunities I got, where I joke all the time, I didn't go to class in college. I was in the basketball office 40 hours a week doing basketball. And I scraped by. I think I graduated with like a 2.2, a 4.0 and a graduate degree in basketball and coaching from some of the mentors I had. So I think people need to understand that you need to be around it. You need to be doing more than your share. You need to be, as you said, take the ball and run with it. And then you get more responsibility. So I love that's how you got your start. It's giving me flashbacks to my own. Let me ask you this. When you got to DePaul and you were, I don't know if the role was similar as a GA and an on-court coach, whatever it is. But what I want to know is, can you identify a few of the things that you realized right away that you needed to figure out, right? You thought you had this stuff figured out and what you were doing. And now, you know, you're going Division I, Division III, GA to assistant coach. But what'd you learn right away? Holy cow, I got to figure this one out.
I'd say the first one for sure would be simply just really just finding my own voice. As a GA, you say a lot of the things to an assistant coach, or you whisper something to your fellow GA. But when you become an assistant, it's use your voice. Now it's your turn to really speak up. And that's one thing I think instantly hit me was the first few practices, I was super quiet. And I remember our coach, he was like, you doing okay? And I'm like, I've just never been in this position where you're empowering me to be verbal in practice. So I would say being vocal and finding my voice, my coaching voice, that would be the first. And then the second was really as a GA, there's times during a game you're charting stuff or you're worried about maybe the food's running late. Like there's other logistical things, but now that you're in the coaching role and it's like you're thinking of sets or maybe a curveball for defensive switch up, just something you're trying to always, I'm notorious, and our head coach will say this, I'm notorious for just throwing ideas out, like spewing them out. And that's something that I really had to transition from. You're in that shoe or you're in those shoes and whatnot on the bench. If something's not going right, just throw something out. Maybe it sticks. And there was a couple of times where we're playing our rival and I threw an idea out for a set and it worked. And it was like the moment where I'd say I really found my voice in coaching and my place is, I definitely think as a GA and manager, I may have dealt with a little of imposter syndrome of maybe I don't belong, maybe I do, who knows? And then that moment, middle tight game, sold out crowd, rival, play works, and coach middle of the game turns around, gives me a fist bump, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, this is great. This is awesome. This is, I can do this. And that was so empowering and whatnot. But really finding my voice, I would definitely say was the first one when I became into the assistant coach role.
Nice. I love that for two reasons. Number one, I've always said a good assistant coach is willing to get told no 99 times and still make the 100th suggestion. And I don't want to be looking over, do you have anything? I want things being peppered, similar to what you do. And secondly, the preparedness that you have based on the amount of film that you watch probably led you to be able to make those suggestions and to have something to suggest rather than not doing the deep dives that you traditionally do. So I think that's luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and you're sitting on that due to the work you do outside of the office, so to speak. Let me ask this. So you've worked at two different programs, actually held three if we count your high school program. What would you say if you could identify as the best thing that each of those programs did, that when you become a head coach, you're definitely doing that? Whatever you feel was the thing that most had the greatest ripple effect on culture in that program that you want to make sure you hold on to because of how transformational it was, both high school, Indiana State, and now at DePaul.
Man, that's a great question, Climo. I would say number one, finding great people. I think that's huge in this. High school, obviously, it was a lot of talent mixed with great people. College, I can't say enough about the GAs I worked with, the coaches I worked with, and the players as well. It was an amazing experience. And then this year at DePaul, I think hit home the biggest in terms of great people. I don't think any staff in America has more fun than ours, whether we're doing a tour or we're eating at lunch or on the road. It's just great. And then the players, I think that's the underrated trait in recruiting, is just the character of a guy, like the true character of a guy. Like obviously they're talented, but they always talk about you can get away with one bad guy or a cancerous guy in the program, but two, it spreads a little. But I can go one to 15 and great guys. I thoroughly enjoy the time I spend with them. And I think if you surround yourself with great people that have great intentions and you have that one common goal and you're willing to work for it, especially at this level where our seasons, we're in the off season right now, we can't work with guys due to the rules and whatnot, but I know guys are putting work in. Yeah, you just find the work ethic mixed with great people, and I think you can accomplish anything.
Let me follow up with this. As you are constantly looking to grow, both as a coach and your database of information, and you're constantly watching other teams, what have you learned watching other teams that you would like to appropriate and utilize in your own program if you were Lord and Master of all? What are some of those things that were, I like that? And not necessarily in the weeds on it, but really, wow, if we can do that, would be super helpful.
From a philosophical standpoint, or?
It is an and question. However you would like to answer it is okay with me.
Sounds like a common friend of ours. I would definitely, the first one, I've really been fascinated with a certain offense right now. So I've really been diving into that, like just what are the intricacies of it? And I've also noticed a common theme that more so at the college level, but also the NBA and Europe and everywhere, is they're running concepts of it, not that exact offense, but there's concepts and you're slowly seeing it all over. And just how can we incorporate that into our scheme and whatnot? And one cool thing about our coach is, and it's unique at first when I first met him, but he doesn't really have an offensive philosophy. It's a year by year basis. We base it around the talent, the personnel we have, and we go from there. And I think this upcoming year, our talent matches that exact scheme. So it's been super cool to have both of those worlds collide. So that's one thing I definitely think of implementing. And it's actually something that he wanted me to, once again, take the ball and run with it. I threw out the idea of, hey, I think this would really be something good for us. And all right, cool. Go find me some clips, find some teams that run it, show it, draw it up for me. And yeah, it looks like we'll implement some of it. So that's definitely something I'm excited for.
That's awesome. What about as you're out scouting in person? What are some things you've picked up watching that maybe hasn't directly translated into your team at DePauw, but just they're in your file box for when you're in charge?
That's a great question. Now, when you say scouting, are you saying potential players or opposing teams?
Yeah, great follow-up question. And let me rephrase this. Generally, I ask people what they've learned watching other sports that aren't basketball. But since you don't watch anything but basketball, I'm not going to waste my time asking that question.
I actually have one for you. It was raining outside one day, and our lacrosse team, the team was playing in the gym, and I'm never watched it. I grew up a Duke basketball fan, so I know Duke lacrosse is notorious and whatnot. Didn't know much, but I'm standing on the balcony one day and they're talking about their zone defense and whatnot. And I'm like, this kind of looks a little similar to some concepts we can run. And that actually, it's crazy. You went this way with the conversation because I had recently listened to a podcast with Stan Van Gundy, and he talked about the NBA and more teams using the zone. And you saw the Miami Heat incorporate some of that. And I sent it to our coach, and now we're implementing some of that. And it all intertwines back to the lacrosse story of, I was like, coach, you ever watch lacrosse? And he's like, oh, I'm like, all right, let's watch a little bit of practice. And you're hearing some, not the exact terminology, but you're picking up, okay, this is what that means compared to what we call it. I would say that'd be the one experience for sure from another sport where I just picked up on some of their zone concepts and whatnot. So maybe, and we've never been, me and myself and our head coach have never went zone, never. I think we have maybe 3 possessions on synergy last year going zone, but who knows, maybe we'll play some more this year. I have a good feeling we might, so we'll see.
Here's my takeaway, Dalton, and I love that because I was pretty right on except for the accident that made it happen. I truly believe that people get tunnel vision in their discipline, and you have to force yourself to think about how can I learn from others that may be doing something similar, even though it's a different discipline. So I've talked about this as I've matured, let's call it, or I've gotten older, right? What did Jay Wells talk about? You get wisdom only through age, to where for me, athletics is just a vehicle to teach leadership and followership and how to be part of something bigger than yourself. And ultimately, each discipline, there's a different way to do that, but they all transfer if you're willing to learn. You took a specific tactical, philosophical thought and made a connection. So my challenge for you would be, especially in the off season when you can't do anything, those teams that are in season, how are you at those practices? How are you watching what they do behind the scenes to grow your own toolbox again of things that might translate, even though they don't normally align with the sport that you are currently coaching? Here's a question. I noticed this, pools are outside the office. So I watch swimming and water polo all the time. And I made this observation. I said, what would it be like, Dalton, if you could never get on the floor or physically demonstrate what you're asking these guys to do? Because if you're on deck as a swim coach or a water polo coach, like, you can't get in there and show them. So what does that do to your approach to teaching? And you don't have to answer that right now, but it's something that I've been trying to think about, how to coach in a way in which I'm breaking down physically. How can I still demonstrate? So that type of thing. What are your thoughts on that?
It's crazy you mentioned that. I just finished up Nick Nurse's book, and I can't remember who the exact coach was, but he told me the head coach, when he was either in high school, college, used to run up and coach from the press box. And I don't know, like, basketball wise, I don't know how applicable that is, obviously. And he mentioned that in the book, but it's definitely given me some thought of the various sports that you mentioned. It's like, how can you coach that way? I know a manager friend of mine mentioned his head coach. There are some practices where he'd sit up in the upper bowl and just sit and watch, or he'd coach from up there. And yeah, it's definitely a unique perspective. I had never heard of it before and never thought about it before until I literally a couple of days ago, I read it in the book, and then you just mentioned it now. So it's definitely something to ponder about.
Yeah. When my head coach was on a couple of weeks ago, Bob Williams, he made a comment that I highlighted in the newsletter, and it's like, where are you standing during each drill in practice? And if you haven't thought about that in advance, you're not doing a good job, because it's very particular as to what you're looking for and where you stand. And if you find yourself always standing in the same place, you don't have the same perspective that you might have somewhere else.
I like that.
Yeah. So keep it in mind. I actually watched the video where I'll run it back with TB and I, and hey, where are you moving on the court? Or I'll see him standing. I'm like, go over there. Right. And just make sure that we're trying to get different angles on what we're doing. Let's go here. You have been with four different head coaches, it sounds, right? High school, two at ISU, and then coach now at DePauw. What are the elements you think make a good practice? Stealing from everybody. What are the things that you think, hey, this is a great approach that you can have the best probability of getting a good outcome from a practice standpoint?
First off, I definitely say organization. It's one thing I've put down as a mental note to myself is, what would you do if you had to make the practice plan today? Say coach can't make it, or whoever else is that on the food chain ahead of you, but how or what would your practice plan look like? I'd say organization. Our head coach is very, he's got the time. And if the time ends, more often than not, we're moving on to the next thing. Unless we're really doing bad, then we'll make sure to stick on it. But I'd say organization first. And also within the organization, your voice in terms of clearly explaining things. I feel like I've had a handful, like all four, I think, check this box of whatever the drill is, whatever defensive drill, or we're working on some offensive breakdown. One of our coach called it talk and teach. It's always very clear and concise. And you know, we're trying to get out of the drill. You know what the objective is, what we're trying to accomplish. I would say both of those two. And then also to both of those, I'd even throw in a curveball of being flexible. Maybe you're feeling the vibes off from the practice plan, and maybe you need to go something different that maybe you hadn't even thought about. We're going to pivot and do this. And that's been something we've done this year at DePauw. Our head coach is also, he's been super flexible. Our guys will, maybe we'll be shooting free throws, and he'll feel out the vibe of how the last segment of practice went, and he'll, hey, we'll scratch this. Let's go to this instead. I think this will get the guys going. It'll get us more energized and whatnot. So I think those three, organization, having a clear, concise voice and being able to explain things, and then just being flexible as well. And having a good awareness as a coach to know what the practice is going in the vibe.
Love that. Let me follow up with this, since we're on this synopsis of your mentors. What would you say if I asked what a specific piece of advice or specific learning that you got from each of those four leaders over your time that you still hold on to this day? So from him, I learned X, Y, Z.
It's a great question. Wow. I would say one common theme, and it's weird, they've all came at different points, and maybe it's not a piece of advice per se, but it's a comment they've made to me that has stuck with me. My high school coach, he had told me that I could do it at the next level. And then my first coach at Indiana State had called me a sponge my sophomore year when I really started to get into it. And he said he loved having me in the office, which, as I've mentioned before, is like a forbidden thing. You didn't really come around. My most recent Indiana State coach, he talked about how the different paths, and that he gave me the empowerment of, just because you aren't a former player, you can do it. And then obviously at DePauw, this one has just been, it's really just empower. Now it's really empowering me. Hey, here's some rain here. I had a couple scouts this year. I never had a scout before, putting the scout report together, the films all together. I'd say it's a lot of that. And another one, and he wasn't a mentor, but I also fell in love with the game of basketball because of JJ Redick. But one of his quotes is, you've never arrived, you're always becoming. And I feel like that's something that's really sat with me of, yes, I have all these mentors and read a handful of books, and I have a handful more to go, but it's knowing that I know some, but I won't know it all. And that's what like motivates me, is knowing that there's so much more I don't know, and I have so much more learning I still have to do and growing. And I would say those pieces, those little things of empowerment, but also the JJ quote. And honestly, there's probably a couple others that I have saved in my phone somewhere, whether it's a text message or something like that. Those are the ones that have stuck with me the most.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I want to follow up in regards to the way in which you learn, especially in your early days of coaching, especially at the collegiate level, when you're working your way up the proverbial social ladder. What would you say is a common myth about college coaching that you would like to dispel?
Definitely that it's X's and O's, like the whole, that's all, you dominate that. There's so much more that goes into it. And our common friend, it's a lot more mental than when it gets to the physical aspect of terms of what's this guy going through. And I feel like that's honestly been one of my best traits to tie it in together is the relationship aspect of when I was a manager, I could translate to the coaches, hey, this guy's been going through some things today, or he just had a test or something. I think the myth of just the X's and O's being like the main or the whole aspect of coaching, like there are, it's like a puzzle. There are a ton of pieces that go to this coaching puzzle, and X's and O's, yes, it's a good piece, but there's 100 other pieces that go to that puzzle, especially at the Division III level, whether it's social media, recruiting, the parents, there is a lot that goes into coaching, and especially being at the head seat. Yeah. Keep your phone on. Just there's a lot of things. You just never know. There's a lot of boxes, a lot of jobs, a lot of hats you wear.
Love that. Got a couple places I want to go here. Let's do this. I'm going to try out a new question. We'll see what we get out of this one. What's an insult you've received that you're most proud of?
Oh, that I never leave the office, or that I'm always up my coach's butt. I never leave the office. I got called. Oh, actually, it actually just happened a couple weeks ago. Not even the office. This is from an opposing coach. We were watching a game and we had to go to a different court, and I'm pointing out the court and this coach goes, oh, so you're just following your dad around? And I was like, great. I got a good laugh out of it. But our head coach actually turned around and was like, hey, I wouldn't know where to go if it wasn't for him. And I was like, I appreciate that. And I know it's a lot of, I live in our coach's office, to be honest. Like I share an office with a handful of other assistant coaches right now, but you'll catch me. If you need to find me, if I'm not in that office, I'm 100% on the coach's couch, just shooting out different ideas, writing on the board. I don't leave him alone. I always joke with him. He'll probably watch this or listen to it, but he's been coaching longer than I've been alive. So I always mention that to him. And I'm like, I'm practically like your second son. Like I'm probably old enough, but I'm always around him. And that was probably the insult that I got, that it's an insult to most, but to me, I take great pride in it because it means I'm doing something right. So I definitely take great pride in that one.
That's great. I had no idea where that was going to go. And that's a perfect first run at that question. Let's talk a little bit about your infatuation with Summer League and what you have learned and what you have accumulated in regards to a content library. And talk just a little bit about that project and where you're at with it and what are your takeaways so far?
Yeah, so last year was the first year that I just said, I want to watch. As a kid, I watched them, but not like religiously. But now last year it started where I watched every Summer League game. And at the time it was, what X's and O's can I grab? What do I like philosophical, like little tactics that teams are using and experimenting with in the Summer League. And this year, before we hopped on, I was finishing up a game, but I think I have like 30 more to go because there's so many. But this year, I think it turned into more. Maybe it's because when I was younger, I was always fascinated with team building. Like I thought, oh, I'd be in GM one day. But now it's became, what does this guy have that I can find in a recruit? Maybe not at his level to play in the NBA one day, but what kind of aspects or little traits does this guy have that now when I go on the road, I can look for that in certain recruits? And I think there's something to be said for guys that, as a coach, that have feel, like just see the play. Like they're a coach on the floor and figuring out what those tactics are and how can you translate those from the Summer League to your local AAU event. I'm going to an AAU event this weekend. I'm going to see what I can find from these guys that play in the Summer League. What little traits are they doing that maybe this guy doesn't do it at that level, but it's something where if we have that foundation at our level and I can build upon that with our staff over the next 4 years, knock on wood with the portal, that we can just really accomplish great things once that player is done. So that's been a translation or a transition per se from what X's and O's can I get last year? And this year I still watch for that, but more now it's just the little traits of what can I see in guys that I can find in guys that will be the DePaul Tigers one day.
Yeah. And I love the creativity of that because As you said, last year I was looking at X's and O's. This year I'm looking at player traits and where I can identify those in potential recruits on a scaled level, which I don't think too many of us go that far down the rabbit hole of here's this tool, but more importantly, here's how I plan to apply it. And I think that's a great thing that you're doing there and really impressed by that. All right, last question that I always end with. What have you most recently changed your mind on? Meaning, I used to be over here and now I'm over here and here's why. And it was a very conscious moment of, you know what? I don't believe in that anymore. Now I'm over here.
Again, we've actually hit on it. It's playing zone. I was never big on playing zone. I was always man-to-man, pack line, help the helper, all those things. And listening to the Van Gundy podcast has been, it's probably one of the best I've ever listened to. And he talks about, just like how I spoke of earlier, there's zone. And I don't know if it's your natural or your traditional zone. Maybe there's a twist of various things. Like one of my coaching mentors talked about Rick Pitino, or I think it was Rick Pitino, that he would call out 24 and it'd be 2-3 zone. But on the fourth pass in the half court, you go man. So whatever that second number is after that many passes, you go man. So maybe it's that. Or there was another coach that talked about a zone, and if he would define it by cutters, and you'd go man if off a cutter, and there was, or if the ball went between below the free throw line, you go man after that. You called like fire and go man after that. Like there's a handful of things that I was like, no, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to ever go zone. But the more the talent level increases, you kind of have to find that curveball and that switch up. And it's crazy because I feel like you're talking to my head coach as well at the same time, because he never believed really in pressing or doing some kind of press. And then this year we pressed. So he's changed his mind on pressing. I'm changing my mind on zone. We're all evolving and just trying to be better.
The zone thing I'm not sold on still, but the press thing you mentioned, we're real bullish on. And I think from my standpoint, is especially in a situation like yours where you don't have year-round to work with your athletes and you don't have as much prep time as maybe you would like, I've always tried to take the approach, which is, how do you steal practice time from your opponents by doing things that force them to prepare for you, whereas you don't have to prepare for them? And ultimately, it might not be the same, but I talked to our football coach last year about it. And I was like, how can you hack coaching football the way that I feel I have hacked coaching basketball at the high school level, at least, where is if you press and you do certain things, you can turn it into organized chaos and you're better at that than they are. So I think in each sport and at each level, obviously, it's harder to do that because the talent is better. But I'm always curious, and I think you get a kick out of trying to figure this one out. How do you hack it so that ultimately you're getting a minimum effective dose of time spent to get the maximum results? And I'd be curious to see what you come up with over the years. I lied. I actually had one more question after thinking about your last answer. So traditionally, I stole this from Tim Ferriss, and he talks a lot about failure as an opportunity for growth. And so I'm always curious if you have a favorite failure that has led to your growth or success that you always point to as a transformational moment in your life.
Yeah. So I have a success that leads to a failure. So my first one, the first time I'm coaching that AAU team I spoke of, I had met the guys maybe 2 hours before the first game. And he asked me if I had any sets coming. And I was like, I have one set. And it was what Arizona ran against TCU, a backdoor play. And I'm like, first game, I'm like, just please don't be tied. Like in my head, I'm literally thinking, please don't be tied. Please don't be tied. Game's tied. Seven, 8 seconds left. Just hands me the board. I have never been handed the board. I've never drawn anything up. So I draw it up. It works. We score. All the guys, instant credibility. Oh, you're so great, coach. I'm like, not really, but I appreciate it. It just happened to work. And I felt comfortable with it. I'm like, okay, I can draw up things. Fast forward to our last tournament, last game of the whole summer. I'm drawing up a set and we're down 3. So we need a 3-4 seconds left. I'm drawing up something I'd watched years ago. Timberwolves ran it for Kevin Love. And we break the huddle and I'm like, all right, this should work. Our guys knock down shooter. We tie the game here, coach. We run the play, or right as we're about to inbound, our guy that we're running the play for, it's an elevator play. and he's facing the elevator. So everybody on the court knows he's about to run through an elevator instead of just facing the other way. And it hit me, like, I put my head in my fist or in my palm of my hands or whatnot. And I didn't tell him to face that way. I just thought he would know. And in that moment, I was like, I felt bad because it was their last tournament ever playing, like 17U, last game. And I'm like, it sat with me for a week that I just didn't tell him that detail. So that failure of that moment of drawing, not even telling him which way to face, has made me think, okay, when you draw something up, dominate the details. So that failure sits with me.
No doubt. And I think part of that is something that is a PGC takeaway for me forever, where the last thing the coach says is usually the most important and people are usually getting ready to go. And so making sure there's clean transitions from one activity to the other. So you're drawing, and then it's what questions do you have? Hey, make sure you do X. Now let's go. Versus the hands are coming in and they're already checked out. So it's like, how do you navigate that moving forward as well? This is a great learning opportunity. And the fact that you got one game-winning play under your belt at your age is awesome.
I definitely would send it to all my mentors and whatnot. I had a great time with it. So
last question, for real, since you have so much knowledge and so much time you're pouring into this, I'd love for you to be able to share with others. Where can people find you, reach out to you, get a look at the vault, and anything else you may have to offer with your 99 suggestions?
They can find me on Twitter. My Twitter is DaltonDietrich7. That's all my social medias, Twitter, Instagram, the whole nine. Not on TikTok, but that's where people can find me. I do a lot of retweeting of one common mentor of mine is actually the guy that is behind Pick and Pop, mm-hmm. Zach Bovaire. He's a good friend of mine. So I'm definitely retweeting a lot of his, mm-hmm. a lot of his stuff. But yeah, that's where you can find me. And I'd love to connect with anyone and everyone.
Awesome. If you want to talk hoops and find somebody that is absolutely committed to getting better at it, go ahead and reach out to Coach Dalton here. And thanks for being on today. It was fun.
Absolutely, Climo. I appreciate it. I had a blast.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes will get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.